If the roar of the crowd gives you goosebumps, cashing a slip makes you grin, and above all, you love making your bookie cry, then you're in the right place. The number one spot for premier betting advice and wild opinions, shared with a fan base like no other. Welcome home. This is the Punch List MMA Podcast. Here are your hosts, Dale Lippin and Trey Van Buskirk.
Oh, back like we never left. What's going on, ladies and gents? Dale Lippin in here with my bro host, Trey Van Buskirk. What's up, brother?
I'm dreading today.
Why, man? Why?
I usually love and adore our Tuesday nights on YouTube Live, but knowing what we're subject to, knowing what I went through over the weekend, I'm in a world of hurt.
What hurts? What sit down. Tell Papa what hurts.
Well, my belly hurts. I decided to indulge too much during Halloween. No, it wasn't the candy. It was the adult beverages, dude. I still have the shakes.
Now, let me ask you this. So I grew up in an area, those of you that are not familiar with Western Pennsylvania, it's a very hilly area. So trick-or-treating is equal parts mountaineering as it is candy gathering. So you don't get a ton of candy. Like, you get some.
Yeah.
You don't get a ton. And then as the opioid and heroin epidemic has slowly crept into the steel country. Trick-or-treating got pretty sketch. So right. My brother and I were done trick-or-treating at a fairly young age. My neighborhood now, much nicer. My wife and I removed our kids from that environment, and we live in a much nicer neighborhood. Our neighborhood now, Halloween is just as much for the adults as it is for the children. Is that what your neighborhood is like?
You know, we didn't have many trick-or-treaters. I felt like I was more like Santa Claus walking around. I did not dress up as Santa Claus, but I had a wheelbarrow of fun of shots and other fine adult beverages I was passing out to the other adult goers on said venture.
Yeah, so the way ours is set up is most of the houses, like everybody had their setup kind of in their driveway. Not a lot of door knocking or anything like that. Everybody's just sort of set up. A lot of places had shots, jello shots, or beers. Yeah. So by the time, there's less than 100 houses in my neighborhood. By the time we did our loop, if you will, I think I was about 8 or 9 shots deep and about 4 or 5 beers.
But you worked it out. Like you cardioed, you kept omitting all the alcohol while ingesting it as well. So
sort of. I'm gonna we're in the trust tree here, so I'm just gonna let you know this. I don't drink a lot of liquor anymore. As you know, I like Jameson, but I don't drink a lot of it anymore. I've really got off the sauce, so to speak, and have just been enjoying the occasional beer. My belly was not happy and continues to not be happy with me after ingesting a lot of liquor, not to mention a lot of Halloween themed liquor, a lot of sugary stuff, which your boy does not do very well. Mm-hmm. It's not my speed, man. I basically have been spitting hot mud out of my butt since Sunday, man. It's been bad.
Fuck.
It's been bad, man.
I already don't feel good when you say that. Dale.
Yeah.
Probably one of the best treats that we received this past weekend, though. Glover.
Dude, I'll tell you what, man. I'm excited. Here's the thing, right? And he's 42, and maybe I'm old here, right? Maybe I'm old, but I needed that fight to take place in Las Vegas. I needed that fight to take place on U.S. soil, because I'm going to be honest with you. The Abu Dhabi crowd doesn't do it for me. They just don't do it. I don't feel the heat. I don't feel the pop. I don't feel the love and the appreciation for the sport. Glover Teixeira, OG of OGs. Nobody denies this, right? And he's been around for a lifetime. And that was one of the seminal moments in MMA history, really, or promotional history, akin to when Michael Bisping knocked out Luke Rockhold. The difference is when Bisping did it, he did it on U.S. soil, and the crowd paid due respect and homage to the same. And I feel like we missed out on that in Abu Dhabi. I'm not trying to be Debbie Downer and say, beat shit up, because I'm over the moon thrilled for Glover. I'm bummed Corey Sandhagen lost, Piotr Jan outclassed them. It was a masterclass from Piotr Jan. But yeah, man, I just really, I needed that Glover fight to happen stateside. I just wanted that. I needed it to be more storybook. And maybe I'm just being cynical here.
No, no, I think you're totally right. At least he got to bring the belt back. Mm-hmm. He got to do his little parade. You know, everyone's still, you know, holding a tear, holding a candlelight to the greatness that is Glover and 42 years old. And we promised here tonight on November 2nd that to pay homage to a wonderful 42-year-old absolute fucking savage, a shoey for the dads.
Yeah, here's the thing is I don't understand where, and I wanted to ask you about this. How did we land on shoey for a Brazilian fighter? So like a shoey is like a New Zealand, Australia thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, I know why.
Okay, why?
Well, because we were talking about how dads tend to like mow lawns.
Oh, the dad shoes with the okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah.
All right.
So why don't you tell the listeners here what type of beer you have as well as what shoe you will be indulging it out of tonight?
I've got a Golden Road Mango Cart Mango Wheat Ale. This God, is more my speed as far as like what I can handle sweet wise. If you haven't had one of these, they're fantastic. It's like drinking a mango, but it's hint of mango more so than liquid mango. So a nice crisp wheat ale with a mango finish as opposed to a mango, like taking a bite out of a mango. So they are fucking good, man. They are so good. And I will be, you know, it's funny as I thought, I thought I was going to do my grass cutting shoes. Right. I was going to do the Asics, but I realized that after the Tai Tui Vasa shoey, I already had a shoe that I did shoeys out of.
Mm.
And I was like, you know what, dude, I know right. I said the grass cutters, but I figure Dad Force Ones, I'm just going to go with the Dad Force Ones. Ball used to be life. That's how I met my old lady. You know, yeah. I'm a dad because of basketball.
Yeah.
Dad Force Ones.
Wow. I didn't know that those still existed. You probably got some serious J in those. I'm ready to see you commence suck down, good sir.
You going to tell me about your beer and your shoe? Are you just going to gloss over this like you're not going to do it too? That's a good try. But
thank you.
You know, I have three kids, so that whole like I'm going to hide the peas under the napkin thing that you just did, that doesn't work for me.
Gotcha. Well, as I told you as of recently, you know, haters be, you know, come out of the woodworks right now, but I have not been drinking that much beer lately. I've been on the seltzer train as your boy has been on for a long time. Going Coors Pure. Have you heard of this beer yet?
No, what is that? That is, well, what is that? Like they force feed Coors to a bunch of models and make them sweat it out. And then you just gather it up and you drink it. What is it? It seems like mostly water.
California beer, dude.
It seems like mostly water. Is it organic?
Organic barley, organic hops.
Sifted through quinoa.
Water.
Is there kale in that?
No sugar, 92 calories. Guess what? They don't even show the ABV on here. So I had to Google this son of a bitch and be like, hey, is this 2. A non-alcoholic 7. Beer?
2.7.
3.6. So
bro, come bitch. On,
I know. But I'm whipping Ooh. Out Nike Skate Edition SB, boy.
Those are nice. So you're essentially going to drink water out of a Nike.
Yeah, which you could make and argue that's pretty savage.
I guess so. Yeah, I mean, I'll get on board with that. Let's see. Let's hear the crack. Oh, it's even a soft crack.
It is actually kind of squeaked.
Yeah, I mean, it was like wrapped in Egyptian cotton. Your beer is like 300 thread count. That shit is soft.
It is. It's a blanket.
It is. It's just. I'm not digging it. I'm not digging it at all. Oh gosh. How? Any other time I have no problem pouring beer, but now I have a terrible time pouring beer. Oh gosh.
Are we doing this simultaneously?
I mean, we can. Yeah. Golly, this is a nightmare. Whose idea was this?
I don't know. I'm just gonna do it. Here we go.
I've already poured in.
It's crazy how it just holds it like a cup. I haven't done one of these since college,
I'll give you something.
Dude.
I'll give you something you can cup.
Here we go. 1, 2, 3.
Oh gosh.
I'm gonna die.
There's something in it.
Oh my god.
I don't know if you heard that. Oh boy.
I'm pretty sure there was a wood chip in there.
Something in it. I think there was a spider in my shoe. Oh, man, I haven't worn those in a long time. Oh, man. I don't like it. All right.
Are you proud of me now, Pop?
Gosh.
All right.
I don't like it.
Gross.
I don't like it at all. There was something. Oh, man. I didn't like that. There was something in there.
Yep. For you, Glover. We love you.
So essentially, the beer was real foamy. I don't know if it was like baking soda or old foot powder or something made that beer super foamy. So as soon as I poured it, it starts foaming out. And then the foam coupled with whatever debris was in there.
It's probably some leftover athlete's foot powder, some gross shit, dude.
Hey, man. God, I don't know how I recover from this. It's a weird way to start the show.
The only way you got to recover, Dale, is you've got to make sure you're prepared next time. I feel like you're not prepared. You just came in with some nice shoes, beer that probably didn't make any sense. I hope going into the holiday season, you're going to prepare yourself. If you guys want to prepare yourself like I did this year, got my turkey coming on the way, go to stayclassymeats.com, type in our code FIST. That's going to get you 10% off. You've also, Dale, which I'm just going to keep talking shit because I felt like I did that shoey way better than you. You're wearing the Taylor Tombstone shirt version 2. Great tee, great human, great brand. Guys, if you want to wear dope clothes like Dale's wearing, I'm also rocking one of their 6 shirts right now that is covered in pure Coors Light beer. Go to allegiancecloy.com, type in the code PUNCH, and you're going to get 15% off site-wide. Dale, dude, I'm all hyped. That beer got me psyched. UFC 268. Pay-per-view, Madison Square Garden, freaking, let's get the New Yorkers out. Everything else in New York looks like shit, not this card, dude.
Bro, is this what you're like when you get bottomless mimosas at brunch on Sunday?
Yeah, I get pretty hyped.
Let's say you get one low alcohol content sip in you and you're ready to fight somebody.
If my nickname going into an octagon was going to be anything, it would be Trey Bite the Hair of the Dog Van Buskirk.
Wow. Wow. Yeah,
why? So that's what I do.
It just wouldn't be hair of the dog. It would be bite the hair of the dog.
That's the saying, you bite the hair of the dog.
Okay. Is it? I've always just heard hair of the dog. I've never heard the bite the.
Maybe it's just the hair of the dog. You're having me second guess myself. I don't appreciate
that. Hey, look, that's what I'm here for. I'm just here to just sow seeds of doubt into everything you think and feel. Just like when I told you we live in a simulation.
Yes, I know. I thought about that for a while. I have never seen a neighbor carrying groceries. It's been a little weird past 72 hours.
All I'm going to say is think about it. Just think about it. The fact, like, we've all played video games before, right? The world just loads up as you move through it. Every interaction you have just occurs as it's happening to you. You have no way to know whether or not it's actually real. Like, I don't know what you're doing. I have no way of proving that you are real unless I'm doing something to interact with you, at which case you could just be part of my programming.
Well, I'm a part of this program.
That's true. You are. You're an integral part of this program. I think this program is better when you're a part of it, when you're here. Thank you. Yeah, man.
Well, let's give the listeners what they have programmed to listen to. That is the breakdown of this stacked card, dude.
Fine. You're trying to move me along here. That's fine. I understand. It's okay. You can try to move me along. I have the wheel of this thing, and I will drive as slow as I want to. And like I've told you before, like he said in The Wedding Singer, I have the microphone, so you will listen to everything that I have to say. So here, that's what we're doing. All right.
I know.
We have a massive card. It's a massive card, right? And what's great about it is they broke it down into the three of like the early prelims, and the main card, which is how you know that there's a quality card. Whenever they just mash it together, prelims, main card, that's how you know it's shit. But when they want to differentiate early prelims, and main card, they're letting you know which section we're going to be in. So we're going to start with the actual main card. Frankie Edgar at 23-9-1, taking on Marlon Chito Vera at 17-7-1. Frankie Edgar plus 155, Chito Vera minus 180. Now, before we get breaking these down, right? Before we get to breaking these down, I'm just going to let you guys know that while we are going to move through these as quick as we can, there is going to be some detailed breakdowns on these. This is going to be a little bit of a longer show. So if you don't have a beverage, good one to get a beverage. Come back, pause, do whatever you're doing. Boom, boom, boom. We're going to make it happen. All right. So Frankie Edgar, Chito Vera, do we have a banner for this or no?
Dale, we do not have a banner for this one. This is the only one that was not loaded. For those listeners out there, it might also be a little bit of a rocky episode because producer Jake is probably smoking darts, did not show up for his assignment. Again, dude.
Producer Jake is on waivers, bro.
But I'll read it off to you there, good sir. We got Frankie Edgar at a plus 150. We got Marlon Chito Vera at a minus 180. Over-undersdale is set at 2.5. Give me your take, brother.
Gotcha. Well, I think 2.5 is the number to have, right? Frankie Edgar, notoriously durable, despite the fact that he's had a little bit of a mixed bag his last few fights. There have been some finishes sprinkled in there, which we didn't have with Frankie Edgar for the longest time. But that's a testament to where he's at in his career, which is the end. I think this is essentially it, right? Frankie Edgar has lost 4 out of his last 6. His only wins coming over Cub Swanson and Pedro Munhoz. The Pedro Munhoz win was a split decision back in, what was that, August of last year. So Frankie's on the decline, right? Now, I understand that he beat Pedro, and Pedro's one of the top of the division, and you can say, well, he could be competitive at bantamweight still. Maybe he can still hang around and do some things. I really believe that there's probably a very vast chasm that exists between Frankie Edgar and the elite of the division. I don't believe that Pedro is of the elite of the division, which we just recently saw in his most recent fight with Jose Aldo. We've really kind of got a, I don't know, man, Corey Sandhagen, Piotr Jan. I'll throw Aljo in there just because he's the champ per se. I'm going to put Merab in there as a top four, even though he's not ranked as such. It's those four and really kind of everybody else. There's a gap. There really is. And Frankie's just not, he's on the wrong side, right? It's the Western where the rope bridge gets cut and Frankie's being left behind here. Luckily for him, I think Cheeto's on that side of the bridge with him. I don't necessarily think that Cheeto's running away with this either. And small rumors that this may be Frankie's send-off fight, right? They're in New York. He's from that area, geographically speaking. This might be his coup de grace, if you will. And nostalgia's a bitch, man. And he might be able to throw it all together for one more good one against an absolute grasshopper of a human being in Marlon Chito Vera. Where Frankie gets this done, because I'm long-winded and I want to give you a chance here, where Frankie gets this done is a vintage Frankie grind, dirty box, clinch, in and out, mix in your takedowns effort. He's not going to be strong enough to hold Marlon to the ground and dominate him like that, but what he has to do is he has to mix in the takedowns with his boxing and wear Marlon down, because Marlon can fade as the fight goes on. Chito does lack a little bit of grit. He does lack a little bit of blood and guts. So if Frankie can put in that workmanlike performance, he might be able to steal one on the cards here. I would say if you're on Frankie, take Frankie by decision. He's not known as a finisher. I don't believe that Frankie goes out there and knocks out Marlon Vera. I think that one of the safest plays that we've had, historically speaking, as far from a betting perspective, has always been Frankie Edgar by decision. It's essentially the old Kamaru Usman by decision, but we'll talk about Kamaru here later on. Frankie, that's vintage Frankie. So if you want to plug in to the vintage, go into Frankie by decision here. But Chito Vera should win this fight if Marlon Chito Vera ever wants to sniff anything close to a number one contender fight, anything to a top five fight. He has got to beat Frankie Edgar and do so in convincing or emphatic fashion. I just don't know if he's going to get it done that way. For my money, one more time, once more into the breach, Frankie Edgar by decision. I'm going to go with it.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you broke that down so good, dude. I have absolutely nothing really to give, except for I think the over is a good play there. Obviously, minus 170, you're not getting much value. I think Frankie by decision is a good play. I mean, if you want to play him straight at plus 150, that's good. He is going to wrestle. And I think that is a unique look for Cheeto, the grasshopper. Cheeto is going to be, I think, actually have the better cardio, but how's Frankie going to, you know, fare when he's kind of going up and down? He's older, he's 40. That's wrestling, while we believe it is the best and most most critical MMA trait to have, it is also the most tiring. So I hope it's not Frankie's last go. I think he had a rude awakening, obviously, with the Sandman, but he is still a threat. His style is still very exhausting. I think that Cheeto Vera, outside of his striking, which we know we saw with Davy Grant, who chose to strike with him, he is not a guy that fares well with the grappling. So there's a void in the game. I love his hands. I love Jason Parrillo. I love that whole Ruka team. But this is a tough matchup for Cheeto. I'm right with you. I think Frankie by decision is a good play. But I think this goes into later rounds for sure.
Did you say Cheeto's going to have better cardio than Frankie Edgar?
I do. I do think so. Yeah.
Who's ever out cardioed Frankie Edgar? Has anybody ever out?
No, out. I'm not saying that he gasses, but Frankie is a notorious volume type striker, and you see in the later rounds, whether it's two or three, that volume and pace decline exponentially. He doesn't get gassed, but he slows down. And if you see anything about Cheeto's hands are fast. He has a decent amount of volume, but he's more selective with the shots, which doesn't make him exhaust his gas tank.
That's interesting. Interesting. We see. So we both interpret the same data differently. It's almost like the CDC. All right. Let's see here. And then you said Frankie had a rude awakening against Sandhagen. I think it was the exact opposite. I think he was rudely put to sleep.
Another way you're interpreting it. I get it.
Another way. Again, it's weird. Trust the science. All right, here we go. Shane Burgos taking on Billy Quarantillo. Quarantillo at 16-3, Trey, taking on Shane Burgos at 13-3. For my money, these are two top 20 most exciting fighters in the promotion. I've said this before. I will say it again. I freaking love both of these guys. There's not a lot of people. They're on this card, but there's not a ton of people out there in the promotion that I enjoy watching more than Shane Burgos and Billy Q. But I'll tell you what, man, the fact that they're pitting these two against each other, I freaking love it. Billy Q's a plus 160, Shane Burgos minus 200, over under rounds at 2.5. I went first last time. That means you get to go first this time. What you got?
Shane Burgos is going to come into the octagon in a fucking pirate ship. This guy, we said, he is the modern day pirate. If he wins, Dana White pays him in doubloons. He doesn't pay in straight cash. The guy's an absolute psychopath, and that's why we love him. He's out of his mind. He's going to move forward. I'm worried if this guy's going to have chin issues. The guy has gone to war. He's definitely going to have some brain damage going forward. That Barboza clip to the head where he was in it for a second, then blacked out and got KO'd. That is the scariest thing I've ever seen in my entire life. He is durable. We saw that in obviously the Josh Emmett fight. Billy Q, I actually think he's going to be the smarter fighter. He's got a great right. He's got great length, great reach, great reads. He picks it up in the later rounds. He's one of those guys, and we talk about Piotr Jan, this past weekend. He's a guy that can take damage in the first early rounds, readjust in the later, and actually pick it up. I like Billy Q in this fight because I think he's going to be a little bit more strategic in there while Shane Burgos is going to bite down on the mouthpiece. What makes me nervous is I think that the striking and the power that Shane possesses is going to be better, which is going to lay it on Billy, something that he's never had before. He's never felt that type of power. So I think that Burgos' style is going to be heavier, and that heavier type of striking that fares better with the judges. We've seen that as of recently. You could put more volume out there, you could patty cake, but at the end of the day, the freaking judges want the freaking meat cake, dude. They want that explosion. He's going to play to a large loud crowd. He's going to play to the judges. I think this thing fares for Burgos, even though Billy Q is a live dog.
So Billy Q is the live dog here. I mean, 100%. When we talk about the same again, I'm going to rehash the same things we say all the time. A dog that will fight for your money. Billy Q is that guy. I think that the difference maker in this fight is going to be the submission threat of Billy Q. I think that he's going to come at him, and I to a testament to both of these guys' willingness to walk forward, I think that the difference becomes who can control the other one up against the cage and try to get a like get a takedown and move into a submission. I don't believe that Billy Quarantillo wants to stand there for three rounds and throw hands with Shane Burgos. I just don't believe he wants to do that. I don't. Shane Burgos is very good at moving his head, getting inside. He does a great little inside leg kick to like the lower calf inside of the knee to try to destabilize that front leg to make it so your jab's ineffective, to get you to switch stances, because he can switch stances as well. So if he can get you moving, he then can get himself going. So I believe that what his strategy will be is to beat up the lead leg of Billy Q, who walks a little heavy, get him to work, because Billy Q throws a lot of arm punches, albeit effective. If he can get him working, he can get him tired. If he can get him tired, he can get him out of there. Billy Q, on the other hand, has to negate that by closing the distance, punishing Shane Burgos with counter shots. He needs to come over top of the jab with those arm punches, with those straight rights, and he needs to close the distance and get a takedown. If he can get a takedown, I think that he's got a very good opportunity to get a submission. Tiger Shulman is a great gym. Shane Burgos out of there. He's in there with killers day in and day out. But there's a lot of New York heat here. You've got like upstate New York and New York City heat. This is a great fan favorite, a hometown kid real fight. I mean, this is going to be. If we were on opposite ends, I would call this a people's main event. This is probably the fight I'm least inclined to bet on, because I just want to enjoy it I just want to enjoy the violence, to be honest with you. I don't necessarily want to find myself on one side or the other. Gundam, you know, if you're asking me, I absolutely want you to pick somebody. I'm going to take Shane Burgos just because I think he has more paths to victory. Mm-hmm. But truth be told, this is a coin flip fight for me, despite the -200 odds.
It is. And, you know, we have some people in the chat here are saying, hey, we really like the inside the distance here. You know, the over under set at 2.5. You can get under 2.5 here for +170. That might be a play.
Inside the distance is going to come in at like plus or right at even money then. So give yourself the other 2.5 minutes.
Yeah.
I would give yourself the other 2.5 minutes. I like Edward Denham. That's a good chance there. The only thing I would caution you against is the durability of both guys. I know we're talking about the knockout of Burgos or whatever, but again, he's got that big, thick Puerto Rican head. Billy Q has not shown himself to be a powerhouse the way a guy like an Edson Barboza is. I would lean on that head, and Billy Q's own toughness and savvy there. But let's go inside the distance and just hope for violence. Let's like betting the over in a basketball game. Let's just hope for a good game.
Yeah,
I'll go with inside the distance there. I'm cool with it.
Me likey.
Yeah, you cool with that? All right.
Yeah, I'm cool with it.
If you had to pick though, who do you think is going to win that fight?
Like I said, I think Shane Burgos is going to play to the judges a little bit more. So I'm going to go Burgos.
Okay. Man, dude, I'm telling you, that freaking, I don't know what it is. Gold Bond powder or something, man, got me jacked up. All right, Justin Gaethje taking on Michael Chandler. So weird to me that this isn't even a co-main. This is sitting in the middle of a main card. Michael Chandler +170 versus Justin Gaethje. Gaethje at a -210. Over on our rounds here, 1.5, Trey. Let me wet my whistle for the human highlight that is Justin Gaethje.
Ooh, you mean Homer Simpson?
I love me some Justin Gaethje. As most people do at this point, right? And you don't want to be hipster and be like, I was on Justin Gaethje back in World Series of Fighting. But I've had my eye on Justin Gaethje for a while. He was one of the more excited. I was more excited about his acquisition into the UFC than a lot of other up-and-coming individuals. I was very excited when he got here. They've only fed him killers since then. The criminally underrated Michael Johnson, Eddie Alvarez, Dustin Poirier, Tony Ferguson, I mean, Khabib, obviously, like literally they're only feeding this guy absolute monsters. And here comes Michael Chandler. Now, in my opinion, Michael Chandler had a very storied career. in Bellator. He came over and obviously won and won inside the octagon here inside the UFC. I'm not the jury is still out as far as I'm concerned on what I think Michael Chandler's ceiling is and what I think Michael Chandler's capable of within the promotion. As you know, I'm not a huge believer in Charles Oliveira, despite the fact that he is the undisputed lightweight champion of the world. I'm not particularly impressed with Charles Oliveira. Three fights ago, he beat Jared Gordon. I don't love it. So him beating Michael Chandler to me speaks volumes to the skill level of Michael Chandler more so than it does the skill level of Charles Oliveira. But again, that's me. I realize I can be an island in that regard. I think Michael Chandler is a fantastic athlete. In fact, he might be one of the most physically gifted individuals on the roster. Mm. He's a freak. I don't necessarily know how much that translates into him being a good fighter. Mm. I don't particularly find him very good at fighting. I find him very good at being athletic and very good at wrestling and very good at hitting hard, but not necessarily being a mixed martial artist. That's not necessarily something I see him being very good at. He wins brawls. He wins wrestling matches. But when it comes to having to use the old noodle and having to find a plan B or C or work your way through a problem, he doesn't appear to be equipped to do that. Justin Gaethje, I'm not going to say that he's out there writing, you know, magnum opuses as well, but I think he is very skilled in quite a few things, violence being one of them, but I think he's the more complete martial artist than Michael Chandler is. He's not the athlete that Michael Chandler is, but I believe he's a better fighter, if you will. And I think he has more paths to victory. I don't think he's going to submit Michael Chandler, but I do believe that the things that Justin Gaethje does really well, historically speaking, are bad news bears for Michael Chandler, i.e. he hits like a truck, and Michael Chandler has that little tiny head and doesn't like getting hit very hard. Justin Gaethje hits you, bad things happen to you. He also has had terrible problems with his legs and ankles for the latter half of his career here, and anybody that has fought Justin Gaethje will tell you that guy kicks like a horse. So if he goes in there and is able to kick Michael Chandler one or two times, I say one or two times, knowing full well that it can be only one or two times in which he kicks him that can completely alter the course of this fight. It can completely rearrange things. It's a Justin Gaethje leg kick is like a Francis Ngannou uppercut. It will change the course of your destiny. He kicks that hard, and it's possible that this fight does not go very long at all. This has a weird feel to me of a fight that something strange is going to happen in, but I'm knocking on wood that that doesn't happen. I'm going to take Justin Gaethje, and I'm going to lean over 1.5 just because I think Chandler is going to exhaust all resources after the first couple initial confrontations with Gaethje to try to find a way to make an adjustment. But ultimately, his piss poor fight IQ and ability as a mixed martial artist will fall short somewhere in the second round. And Gaethje, being the conductor of carnage that he is, his violence will reach a crescendo somewhere in the second round, early third, and get Chandler the hell out of there.
You know, I'm a big proponent of fighting to certain levels or remaining active. And when you are active, what are those levels that you're fighting against? I don't look at Michael Chandler's recent record. I'm not discounting anything he did in Bellator, but as of recently, sure, he had his intro to the UFC and fight against Dan Hooker. But Dan Hooker was a deer in the headlights from the moment he was walking out, didn't get a good look from standing. Charles Oliveira comes in, quality competition, left hook, ground and pound in the second round. Okay. But prior to that, let's go to his wins, like the Benson Henderson. Benson Henderson wasn't what he was 5 years ago. The dude's on a 3-fight lose skid. Like, he's not what he was. He's fighting guys that are just kind of a little bit over the hill. he's going to be met with someone who has been fighting to his highest potential and been fighting the highest and best prospects in the UFC, i.e. the Khabibs. Now, was the Khabib fight a very good litmus test as to like what, how well-rounded Justin Gaethje is? Absolutely not. I mean, we're talking levels as it relates to wrestling, but Justin Gaethje was in there, fights like a dog. You know, you're going to get in 100% Justin Gaethje every single fight. I wanted to ask you this, Dale. I came on Instagram Live before we went on the live show here. And my biggest question, I'm actually, this is a big benefit, I believe, for Justin Gaethje, is he's getting the first take with Trevor Whitman on the night. After Justin Gaethje, he goes into the Rose Namajunas fight. Then he goes into the Kamaru Usman fight. If I was a fighter, I'd like to get Trevor Whitman from the onset. I don't want him after he's had a couple fights under his belt and he's been sitting cage side. Are you stoked that Trevor Whitman gets him here in this spot? Do you think that fares any difference for the night?
That's a good point. Sure. Yeah, I can see that. I can get on board with that. I think I really honestly didn't occur to me until you said something that Whitman's got three fights back to back to back. That is an interesting thing. Yeah, I mean, as far as a teammate goes, you kind of want to be the lead horse. If Gaethje loses, I don't know what that speaks for as far as volume goes for the next two fights, but we'll get to those here shortly. That's an interesting point. To go back to what you were saying about Chandler, the win over Dan Hooker, the win over Ben Henderson, which was his second time beating Ben. He beat Benson a few years back, which is fine. I mean, he did beat Ben Henderson 5 years ago, back when Ben Henderson was good. I use good in quotations there, but I still think Benson Henderson's a decent fighter. He's just not what he once was. But whenever Benson went to Bellator, that's like the fight they made, was him versus Chandler, and Chandler won that via split decision. But like, if you're talking about losses, you're looking at Brent Primus. That was the one where he got beat via leg kicks. Patricio Pitbull, Will Brooks, and Eddie Alvarez. That's really kind of it. But if you look at who they're giving him in the meantime, Bellator has this weird thing, right, where you're either competing for a title or you're fighting a regional guy, right? Like, it's not like an in-between. You're either like fighting a one or two, like one of their only known names, or you're fighting a regional guy. Like, you're either fighting, if you're and due respect to both of these gentlemen, you're either fighting Ben Henderson or you're fighting Sidney Outlaw.
Right.
Yeah. Like Michael Chandler fought Patricio Pitbull and then he fought Sidney Outlaw.
Right.
I don't know. You fight Will Brooks and then you fight Derek Campos. Like, there's just there's like, when they talk about steps, it's not like the Rocky steps where it's like, it's like the steps at, like, I don't know, man, that shit you see like at national parks leading up to like a mountaintop. It's like step, step, step. Like, they just, there's big time levels there. Anyway, so he comes in, he beats Dan Hooker. Like you said, Dan Hooker, deer in the headlights. I will say this as a pushback to the Gaethje Khabib fight. I thought Gaethje fought Khabib horribly. I thought he looked terrified the entire fight. He looked gassed at the end of the first round. He was doing that crazy elongated loping side gallop to get away from Khabib. He only kicked him a couple times, you know.
I think a big component of that, though, is the whole respect, dude. He came in with too much respect for Khabib, and not meaning like, oh, I respect his tools, but I respect him as a person. When Gaethje is friendly, and we've seen this with a couple different fighters, when we see like a Conor McGregor coming too friendly, that's not a good thing. Gaethje has a little bit of ill will towards Chandler. He's coming in, he's game ready. He knows that the title is looming again for him. It needs to get done. It's going to get done.
Yeah, I need the same Gaethje that fought James Vick to show up to fight Michael Chandler. That's the Gaethje I need.
Fight
that's
James Vick.
That's the one I need to show. All right, man. So, all right, let's get after it here. We got the... Hold on a second. What the heck? There we go. All right. Co-main event, Rose Namajunas at 11-4, taking on Zhang Weili, 21-2. The rematch.
Stupid.
It's a stupid rematch. I agree with you. I've said this before, and I'll beat this drum one more time before I let you talk about this. I think immediate rematches are dumb. I don't think you should have to beat the champ twice to be the champ. I think once you beat the champ, you're the champ. I said my piece there. All right. Zhang Weili taking on Rosnami Yunus. It's a pick'em. Over on rounds, 4.5, Trey. What you got?
Normally, I'd go right back to the Rosewell here. I thought she looked fantastic in their last fight. I think that, I thought that she had the game plan figured out. But I'm not saying you swayed me in our previous conversation. But I am going to say this. What did sway me, I'm still going Rose. Let me just preface with that. But what made this a little bit more interesting is Weili moved camps. She's with Fight Ready. She's with the Henry Cejudos, the Davison Figueiredos. She's around killers in the relatively same weight class. Mm-hmm. She's getting better looks, heavier looks, stronger looks. She knows that she has to move and be more dynamic with Rose. She needs to be more active. The reason that she fell so quickly to Rose in the last fight is she wasn't active. She wasn't utilizing her leg kick. She needs to keep Rose on her toes the entire time. What makes Rose great is those angles, that fight IQ, her great footwork. I don't think someone coming in and doing a Jessica Andrade slam is the way to beat Rose. I think it's the one that's going to be more active, who's going to be first, who's not going to counterpunch. And I think Weili has the cardio. She has the wars behind her. I think that she has the ability to get this thing done, but I also think Rose is riding confidence. And the one thing we know about Rose is Rose does well when she's feeling herself. When she doubts herself, she goes into this kind of weird, who am I? Derek Zoolander, what am I supposed to be, Pop? No, Rose knows who she is. And I think she goes out there and does another dominant performance. I'm not going to say it's going to be freaking, Joanna Jędrzejczyk type fights, but it's going to be a decisive win for Rose.
Yeah, full disclosure, I'm not a clinical psychologist, but I think a lot of what Rose has going on mentally is due to a lifetime full of abuse. Well-documented abuse prior to that, and then her situation with Pat Barry is just as weird as it gets, man.
Why is that weird?
Because Pat started dating her when she was a teenager, and he was a grown-ass man.
Yikes. Did not know that.
Oh, it's full on pedophile. Yeah. Yeah. That's not a cool.
No.
If we go back in a time machine, we can arrest Pat Barry.
Wow.
Yeah. You didn't
Holy
know any
shit.
Of
this? No. And then was the abuse thing before that?
She did some interview or whatever where she was, I don't want to speak about it casually. Cause I don't remember all the details, but there was some point in time where she was sexually abused and physically abused. Yeah. So she's had a rough life. Girls had a rough go. And although her and Pat have a relationship of sorts, I'm not weird. A psychologist. Strange. Anyway. But I think a lot of the mental issues that she could run into would probably come from stuff like that. Again, pure speculation. I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. But also maybe the thing with Rose, like you said, is she's got to be feeling herself. My concern is, right, and this is something I've always wondered with her, especially when it comes to the Joanna fights. Does Rose have really good power, or is she like Anderson Silva, where she hits you in the right spot? Like Anderson didn't have crazy knockout power, but the accuracy is what did the work.
Yes.
Is that the Rose? Is that what Rose does? Because she toe tapped Weili, and Weili folded, legitimately folded back on herself. Now, I will say, I think the punch to the side of the ear, back of the head, as Rose dove on her, did more damage than the kick itself. I think the kick maybe kind of caught her off balance a little bit. The punch to the back of the head / ear thing really did the work if you watch it in slow-mo. But I believe that Rose might have sneaky power. And what concerns me with that is if Weili's chin is gone after the Joanna fight. How big is the button now? Is the button that big that a toe by the cheek can put you down? Like when we saw Chuck's chin go, when we saw Rich Franklin's chin go, when you see the chin go, every time the button gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Is Weili's button massive now? If Rose clips her even remotely clean, is she going down? Can I count on Weili to be able to withstand a storm here? Because if I can, I'm taking her again. I don't think that the 85 seconds or whatever it was that the first fight was, I didn't see enough there that would lead me to believe that Rose Namajunas can beat Zhang Weili more than, you know, more times than she would lose if they were to fight 10 times, right? I don't think Rose is losing or winning rather 6, 7, 8 out of the 10 times they fight. I didn't see enough. I saw her get kicked. Basically the first clean strike that landed knocked her down and then hit her. Same way Jose Aldo versus Conor McGregor. I don't believe that if Conor and Jose fought 10 times that we would see that 13 second knockout or a variation of it every single time. I just don't think we'd see it. But when stuff like that happens, you're beholden to the information that you have. And the information that we have is that Rose Namajunas contains the power within her body to beat Zhang Weili. She is also undefeated in rematches, which also makes me nervous. So anytime you fight Rose for the second time, she beats your ass again. That makes me nervous. I like the switch of camps for Zhang Weili. And I also like the fact that she shaved her head. Now.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, she shaved her head like
immediately. Wait, you shouldn't like that though. You should not like that.
I normally would not, but immediately after the Rose fight is when she did it. So she's been rocking a shaved head for well about a year now.
Got it.
So it's not a new thing. If we saw her embedded and she went from long hair to no hair, no care, then it would matter to me. But she's had a shaved head for a while now. Almost like immediately after Rose beat her, she shaved her head. And I can appreciate it. I just want to know the reasoning behind it. I haven't heard anything. I want to know the reasoning. Is it like Old Testament grieving? You shave your head as like a way to grieve a grand loss? Or did she do it because she thought maybe she might be able to impart some of the, like take some of Rose's power over her away by making herself assimilate to the way Rose looks? Or did she shave her head off and then offer it as some sort of sacrifice?
Right,
that was probably power and prosperity to the ancestors. I don't know, man. I want to know why she shaved her head.
I feel like if anything, that's gonna light the flame even gnarlier in Rose. If someone copied my hairstyle, if you came onto the podcast and your hair looked all feathered and lethal, all bedhead, like, oh, I didn't really try, but I really did fucking try. I'd be pissed. I'd be like, dude, fuck this guy trying to take my steez. Not gonna happen. So that to me puts a little bit more aggression in the Rose Namajunas freaking pocket book. I like it.
But Rose is also the same girl that gave the whole, like, if I can change and you can change, we can change.
Yeah.
Everybody can change kind of speech. I just want to love everybody and be the champ.
I know.
Calls the planet an earth ship. Likes to eat microgreens. Wants to dig wells in Africa and all that kind of stuff.
Man.
You think she cares about that?
No, but it's good optics.
That's good optics for sure. For sure. Yeah, I don't know. I think I honestly just don't believe that Zhang Weili cares about any of that. I think that she's gonna go out there and try to grind Rose out.
I like under 4.5 at -105. That seems juicy.
I doubt that we see a 5-round war.
Right.
I think we see like a 3-round war. I think we see a back and forth, just absolute anarchy 3 rounds.
Yep. Under 4.5. Let's
under 4.5. I'm still taking Zhang Weili. Main event of the evening, Colby Covington taking on Kamaru Usman. Usman at 19-1, Covington at 16-2.
Oh, boy.
Here we are. Colby Covington +230, Kamaru Usman at -290. Over under rounds is at 3.5. Honestly, we don't have to break down another fight after this one. Nobody cares about this, about what we have to say after this.
No,
they probably don't even care what we have to say now, but they're really not going to care after this.
Especially after I say this, MAGA, let's fucking go.
I see. Why do you have to do the MAGA thing? I don't understand you lose me with that every time. You lose me. I'm right there with you. We're lockstep together. And then you start that. And I'm just like, I don't want to do it anymore.
I'm sorry. Well, I'm just excited because I'm a big parlay guy as of recently. I love my parlays, dude. Mm-hmm, finally. Mm-hmm. We talk about my first parlay of the night, not technically on the card. It's actually the last, my anchor parlay here, but we've got my first parlay piece to talk about in Colby Chaos Covington.
The fact that he's a +230 and you're talking about him being the anchor for your parlay.
Yeah.
I don't want to say it delegitimizes us as a betting podcast, but boy, boy, you better be right.
Dude, it's only a two-legger. Dude, here's the thing. Kamaru Usman has been fighting a bunch of fucking glorified 155ers up to 170.
I agree with that. I agree with this.
Colby has been waiting and grinding. He's been in the beat laboratory. Yes, I believe that if Colby didn't get knocked down in that final round, he won that fight in the first one. I think that was the devastating blow. I do think that that was the right stoppage. I do believe that. You don't believe that?
Good. Finish Mark your breakdown.
I think Mark Goddard had it right, even though I don't like – I'm all about Team Covington. He had a single on the ground, but, dude, he was freaking obliterated. I like Covington in this fight for so many reasons.
Give them all.
What did we not see in the first fight? We didn't see any wrestling whatsoever. They were both respecting each other's wrestling traits. Colby, though, is notoriously a better wrestler than Kamaru Usman. I also think – not think. I know Colby has a better cardio tank. That is the guy with the third lung. Colby Covington will have the volume. He has the better threat on the ground as it relates to wrestling. I think he's gotten stronger. He's on bang energy. Like, you tell me this guy's not going to win this fight. Kamaru Usman has fought to a lower level. You're coming off a Jorge Masvidal knockout. Big fucking deal. That's like fighting Nate Diaz. Big fucking deal. Dude, Colby Covington fights to levels. It is a higher level, a better level, a stronger level, a bang level. I'm taking plus 230 to the bank. And I went fucking heavy on this parlay.
What's the second leg of this parlay?
Curtis.
Dude.
Chris Curtis.
Oh my gosh. You're going massive dogs. Okay. Just two. Okay. I agree. I agree with some of what you're saying. I think that we have seen. I'm trying to remember everything that you said that I disagreed with. there's a lot. No, I'm just kidding. I'm on Colby with this fight as well. And going back to their first fight, I thought that the stoppage was bad. For a couple reasons. One, he was in on a single. Yes, he was getting tagged. Yes, he got knocked down. But when you let those guys fight 23 minutes and everybody's broken and everybody's battered and everybody's bleeding and both men are willing to taste death before defeat, you let them finish the fight. You let them finish the fight. You don't step in when you think one of them might be done. You let them tell you that they're done. You let their nervous system, you let their body tell you that they're done. You don't make that decision for them.
Go back. Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but go back to the last week's fights.
No,
that theory does not apply. We saw one of the worst refereeing moments on the planet because a guy didn't want to say no.
Here's the thing with that, right? Is there, that fight should have been stopped when the guy said he couldn't see anymore. When the guy got poked in the eye and he said, I cannot see. Oui, oui, I cannot see. At the miabo, I cannot see. Then you stop the fight. But prior to that, he's being rocked. He's getting beat up. But you know what? He landed in the exchanges with that. He was fighting back.
Yeah.
He's fighting back. He's not standing there up against the cage, arms down, getting pieced up. He was swinging back. Granted, was he hitting much? No, not at all. And he was getting beat up badly. He was getting beat up badly. And you could have stopped it. And it would have been a justified stoppage. But letting him fight through that was not the problem that I had. The problem that I had with this guy, this Vasily Shlovak, whatever his name was Saint that... Denise. No, Saint Denis was the fighter. I'm talking about the referee. My problem with the referee was that Saint Denis said, I cannot see. And the referee was like, I don't care about that. Literally put his hand up, like, I don't care about that fight. That's what I have a problem with. The guy's one-eyed. You can't have a one-eyed man fighting a two-eyed man. That's not fair. But he's willing to fight and go out on the shield. Saint Denis didn't complain about that. His coach didn't complain about it. The only thing they complained about is the fact that he got poked in the eye and the ref didn't give him any time and didn't bring a doctor in. That's it. Mark Goddard, that was a premature stoppage. That's my point. I believe that Colby can win this fight. and I want Colby to win this fight. Okay. But Kamaru Usman has been more active and we've seen more improvement. We have not seen Colby.
That's shit.
No, hold on a second. I'm on your side. So don't treat me like the enemy here. What we have not seen is Colby do anything more than what we know that he's capable of. Usman appears, and maybe he just looks good because he's fighting JV fighters from the 155 division, appears to be getting better from a skill perspective. And if he's getting better from a skill perspective, there is the chance that this second fight may go differently than the first. I think that a lot of people have themselves convinced that we're getting ready to see another five-round war. And I don't necessarily know that that's the case. I think it's going to be one of two things. I think that Usman is going to go out there and throttle Covington and get him out of there, or Colby is going to wrestle death him for five rounds.
Yeah.
I don't think we see another five-round banger. I don't think that's what this is. I don't think it lives up to the hype of the first fight. I'm going to lean on Colby Covington to get it done because I thought going into the fifth round, because I don't bullshit. Going into the fifth round, I had it tied 2-2. I thought that the fifth round was incredibly even and the knockdown had swayed it to Usman. Prior to the knockdown, I thought Usman was probably going to win the round anyway, unless Covington really found a way to do something in the last minute and a half or whatever, however much time was left. The momentum of the fight was leaning towards Usman as Covington was wearing more of the damage and seemed to be reacting more poorly to the shots that were being landed. One of the things that has me concerned in this fight is the lack of heat. This fight, we as fans know the heat behind it, but there's no, like, promotionally speaking, interview speaking, they've done a pretty piss poor job actually kind of promoting this whole card. And they've done a particularly piss poor job promoting this fight. And I don't necessarily know if it's because Usman didn't want to do the press or Covington didn't want to do the press, but they've not done a great job promoting this. Like, there should have been a little bit of a media tour. They should have had these guys on ESPN talking to each other. They should have been on various media outlets talking to each other and push this thing.
Yeah.
Get the fever pitch. Cause this, you're talking about two polarizing people in a fight that everybody wants to see at freaking Madison Square Garden on a double title fight pay-per-view. Fucking sell it, baby.
I'll tell you why they didn't. And it's the same reason why Colby has not been active. Colby justifiably should have had the run back without a doubt. The only person that didn't want that to happen, or actually the only two people that didn't want that to happen, were Kamaru Usman and Ali Abdeslees, dude. That management knew that the fear that Usman saw that night could be replicated once again. So that's why he got pitched all these softballs. He's getting it back. He doesn't want the amount of eyes on this fight, dude. I'm telling you, because Colby's going to come in there and freight train the son of a bitch.
It's possible. I mean, it's very possible. Look, he beat Tyron Woodley. Okay. He beat Colby. All right. But one of the things, I will say this, the one thing that does bug me about this, right? That does bug me about this is that outside of the Tyron Woodley win where he won the belt and the Colby Covington win where he defended it, he's beaten Jorge Masvidal and Gilbert Burns. And people are talking about, like, Kamaru Usman, like he's the greatest welterweight champion that's ever existed. Right. And yeah, I cannot subscribe to this logic. I cannot do it. I don't even think that a second win over Covington, should he get one on Saturday night, puts him in that field. All that to say, plus 230, Colby's going to put himself in a position to win the fight. We will see whether or not the improvements that Kamaru has made is a guy getting better playing against JV kids, or if it is, in fact, going to translate over to the 170 division. I don't necessarily know if it is or it isn't. I'm going to go Colby for plus 230. We'll see what happens, right? We'll see. Kamaru has consistently reacted poorly to power his entire career. He does not like being touched. And you say, well, Dale, nobody likes being punched in the face. I completely get that, right? I completely get that. But everything from the Emil Mech fight to the Dos Anjos fight to the first Colby fight to Masvidal to Burns. He does not like being hit, man. He does not react well to it. It's not his cup of tea at all. He doesn't want to be in a firefight. He doesn't want to be in the grit. He doesn't want to be in the mud, in the mire. That's not where he wants to be.
No, he'd rather be faking nut shots and faking eye pokes.
I will say this, that teep kick that Colby hit him the first time was a clean kick. The eye poke, I'd have to go back and watch it again. I can't remember. I remember people making a hullabaloo about it. I see people talking about it in the chat. I remember the body kick, though, and that shit was clean. And I remember him being like, oh, nut shot. He's like looking at Goddard like, wink, wink, you got me, bro, right? Yep, I got you, bro. So anyway. All right, man. Started the early prelims and work our way up.
Let's do it.
All right, CJ Vergara taking on Ode Osborne. Ode Osborne at 9-4, Vergara at 9-2-1. Osborne at a -185, Vergara at a +155. Over and around is at 2.5. I'm on Ode Osborne here, and I'm on him inside the distance.
Yeah, I mean, this dude's massive for the division. Remember, he dropped down to this division. He's massive. He's coming off the loss to Manel Cape. And Manel Cape is – he came from Ryzen, right? Manel Cape?
Who? Yeah. Yeah.
He's an absolute stud. So, I mean, he's fought the quality of competition. Ode by KO. It might be a fun little sprinkle there. This CJ guy's Dana White Contender Series guys, you know, he's going to be one of those guys that has to slow down this fight. He's going to have to wrestle it up against the cage, constant pressure. But I think Ode's too strong. He can break away, and he's definitely got power in those hands. So, yeah, Ode by KO could be a good play.
Yeah, for sure. Which, you know, who will be happy to hear you say that is Hot Take Kate, because I think Ode is one of her Midwest guys that she works with or whatever. So she'll be happy to hear you say that we're on him.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see here. Who is it? Is it Melsik Bagdasarian?
Yeah.
And Bruno Souza. That's next. Souza at 10-1. Bagdasarian at 6-1. Big time favorite here on Bagdasarian. -310. Silva +250. If I'm not mistaken, is he not the biggest favorite on the card? Is Bagdasarian here? I believe he's Ian Gary is the biggest favorite on the card.
That's right.
But anyway, it doesn't matter for this fight. Souza +250, Machida Academy, a fighter taking on Melsik Bagdasarian, -310, over and around is 2.5. How's Melsik win here, Trey?
Well, he's getting a short notice fighter in Bruno Souza, so that's one thing. But he is getting an LFA champ. You know me, I love my LFA guys.
I know you do.
Souza coming in short notice, though, also training, like you said, under Lyoto Machida. I hate the karate style. He has the same type of karate style as Lyoto Machida. Dude, wide open, a lot of fucking bullshit with the hands, leaves yourself open to be getting clipped. Melsik is very strong, good level chains, a lot of freaking power. He's unorthodox, so he's going to be able to present some, you know, issues that Souza's not going to be able to see, especially on short notice. I mean, hence why you got the -310 here. I'm not playing this fight because there's no value. And to be honest, you know, who knows? LFA guys are strong, but Melsik should get this thing done.
I'm going Melsik by KO, baby. I'm waiting for you to say it.
All right.
I'm taking him by knockout, man. I'm taking the gun. Dude, if your nickname is the gun, you better knock somebody out. Don't you dare have your nickname be the gun and come in there and decision somebody. I want headshots only.
Love it.
You know what I love even more is that it's the gun taking on the tiger, which is if he beats Souza, he can call himself the poacher. These nicknames just make themselves.
It's poetry.
It's poetry, man. He's like a Pokemon. He can evolve into his next form, going from the gun to the poacher. All right, Dustin Jacoby taking on John Allen. John Allen at 13-6. Dustin Jacoby at a -340. 15-5-1 is Dustin Jacoby. He's hopping in here. Boy, oh boy. Last second replacement to come in here and fight John Allen. And John Allen got a tougher fight, in my opinion, in getting Dustin Jacoby. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, John Allen's kind of a piece of shit, dude. This guy's, you know.
What do you have against John Allen? He seems like a nice guy.
Oh, yeah. They got popped for steroids.
Oh, man. Damn.
Dude, remember the whole Mike Rodriguez overturn fight? Lost that. He won it, but then it got overturned because he got in the post-fight drugging screen.
Yeah, you're right. Okay.
Me no likey, no cheaters. But I like Justin Jacoby. Remember, this is the dude that left, obviously, MMA for a little bit to go hone in on the kickboxing, be all about the kickboxing style. Amazing kickboxing. You know, he's obviously struggled always a little bit with the wrestling, but I don't think Allen's going to come in here and freaking do a wrestle-heavy attack. I think Jacoby gets this thing done by murder, dude.
Yeah, I mean, I took him over Darren Stewart. Yeah, so I faded him against Justin Ledet. He beat the hell out of Justin Ledet. I faded him over Maxime Grishin, and I thought Grishin won that fight, but whatever. And then we had the split or the draw with Kutalaba, and then the Darren Stewart fight. So Dustin Jacoby has looked good in his second run with the promotion. I have no reason to believe that he's not going to beat John Allen. What cracks me up about John Allen is John Allen is like super Brazilian, like as Brazilian as Brazilian gets. Right. And his name is John Allen. Like when the telemarketers call you and they're somewhere in Bangladesh and you know this person's name is Rakesh and they're like, how do you do, sir? My name is Sebastian. Your name is not Sebastian.
Did you get our mailer?
Yeah. I'd like to talk to you about your car's extended warranty. It's like,
the fucking extended warranties. Are you getting those right now?
I don't get the extended warranties. I get the medical alert bracelets.
Man, I get their car's extended warranty every day.
Yeah.
It's brutal.
Yeah. I get the they want to talk to me about Medicare, Medicaid, and an alert bracelet. So, which maybe I'll probably need at some point, but I just don't need it yet. But yeah,
is it the necklace the help I can't get up?
Yeah, it's just the two. Like it kills me, man, because I call and they're like, "Who did?" My name is Timothy, and you're like, "Bro, your name is not Timothy, man." I hate that. I try to waste their time as much as I can. But they usually call me when I'm at work and I'm trying not to.
I'm calling from Detroit, Michigan.
You're like, no, you're not. No, you're not. Oh, man. Anyway, okay. Dustin Jacoby, and he gets it done. Just don't fall into the trap of inside the distance here. No. Just Jacoby or bust. Don't fall into the inside the distance trap because John Allen fought Roman Dolidze, who has more power than Dustin Jacoby, and took Dolidze the distance. I think did Dolidze win by split?
Well, dude, you're going to have to do something with Dustin unless you're going to make him a parlay piece at -350. No one's going to take him straight money line.
Well, I'm just saying avoid him if need be. Like this there's so much other stuff going on this card. You don't have to touch this fight. Do not feel inclined to use this fight at all.
No.
Because something weird could happen here.
Yeah. Agreed.
Don't feel. Another fight that you should probably avoid is this next one. John Volante at 17-13. That's a real record for somebody that fights in the UFC. taking on Chris Barnett at 21-7. I'm just going to call it a pick 'em because that's what it's going to be.
Yeah.
And Trey,
can't do it.
This is like if you go to do you guys have county fairs in San Diego?
Oh, yeah. I love them.
Are they shit shows Carnies. Like that? Are they shit shows like they are everywhere else?
Oh, yeah.
Or is it like high class with like wine tasting booths and all that shit?
No, it's shit show, yeah.
Gotcha. So I would go and probably think it was the fanciest thing I've ever been to, but you call it a shit show.
Yeah, it's like a 4-star hotel.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah. Let me put it this way. Is it safe to wear sandals at your fair?
Why could you not wear sandals at your fair,
bro? What?
Yeah, I wear sandals
at the Delmar weird all the stuff time. On the ground and needles and sticky stuff and other people's feet and dust and stuff. You're gonna wear sandals to a fair?
Yeah.
Oh gosh, okay, really?
So yeah, there are levels, I guess.
Yeah, there's levels. Yeah. You don't wear sandals to a fairground.
Are you saying that John Volante and Chris Barnett are like two carnies that got pissed at each other that they didn't get enough stuffed animals in their tent?
I'm saying that on Black Friday, you could go to a Walmart and probably see a fight very similar to what we're going to see on Saturday night between these two guys.
More high class, though.
Maybe. Yeah. It just depends. John Volante, again, like Sam Alvey, not sure how he's employed with the UFC still. But damn it, if they don't just love giving this guy fights. And he's fighting on Chris Barnett. Barnett, long time coming, people wanting to see him inside the UFC. Just a matter of whether or not he could make the weight. Those of you who are not aware, he is 5'9", and that's a pretty generous 5'9". He cuts weight to make 265 pounds. He can move a little bit. He can move a little bit. Just not necessarily as much as you would like him to. Something tells me it has to do with the fact that he's 5'7" and weighs 265 pounds.
Yeah, he kind of Sonic the Hedgehogs around the octagon. Yeah.
Yeah, he's tough. It's tough, man. He's tough. Coming off a loss to Ben Rothwell, where Ben Rothwell somehow managed to beat him by a guillotine, which you think is not a real choke. but prior to that, spent some time all over the place. A lot of island fights in Road FC. I know you're a big island fight guy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I know you like that. Losses to memorable names. Oldie Thompson and Alex Nicholson. Lost to Yoel Romero and Ben Rothwell. Pretty much a pick'em fight. If there's two guys out there that make me feel good about myself, it's these two. That's these two.
Yeah.
I don't have a technical breakdown here because it's going to be a shit show if you guys haven't figured that out yet.
I know. I have to keep betting on Volante, though. I've done it three events in a row, I think, and has not fared any of the three times. So I feel like it's kind of like Yankees bettors can relate, you know, when the Yankees go on a crazy lose skid, you just got to keep playing them because you know that they're going to eventually win. John Volante has to. If he does not beat Chris Barnett here, then it's like, what are we doing? What are we doing? Is he still with Sarah Longo? Is he still in the Sarah Longo camp, John Volante?
I have no idea. Let me look real quick.
I feel like he is.
He's Belmore flushed. Kickboxing.
Ah, God, dude. Who?
I don't know, man.
His last finish was back in 2016.
It's not Sarah Longo anymore either, by the way. I think Weidman's on that now. I think it's Weidman Longo.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I like over 1.5 in this. This is the only thing I actually like in this fight.
I like
these. Both guys are slow. They don't engage. They're not UFC talent. They're going to feel each other out for a quick second, and then someone's going to do something stupid, and then that's where it's going to go. Over 1.5.
All right. Cool. All right, let's move on.
-160.
Ian Gary taking on Jordan Williams. Ian Gary at 7-0. Jordan Williams at 9-5. Jordan Williams +315. Ian Gary -390. What you got?
I don't know why he's at a -390. Ian Gary, he's decent. Cage Warrior, Sanford MMA guy. I think Jordan Williams just had a tough go. Obviously, he's coming off that loss to Mickey Gall. This is a guy that's got, you know, diabetes, you know, big story behind that. Does not, I know. But I actually think that diabetes, I don't know anything about diabetes, but I do know that his cardio is not good. Maybe that's directly correlate. I'm not sure. But he's got poor management because this is a horrible fight for him. Someone that's going to be stronger in the striking department, who's going to have better footwork and way better cardio. Jordan Williams in the later round always starts to wilt. It's probably the diabetes. I'm going with a guy that probably doesn't have the diabetes.
You know, I don't think this is poor management. I think you've got a fighter that's 9-5 coming off a loss to Mickey Gall. You take whatever fight you can get. Be thankful for the payday and the fact that you have a spot on the roster. Beat Ian Gary being a +315 underdog, and then talk about what matchups next for you. Ian Gary, as far as I'm concerned, though, is an anchor parlay piece. Put him in a parlay, feel safe about it, feel happy, move along. Don't overthink it. Ian Gary wins this fight.
Bang.
Bang. All right. Edmund Shahbazyan taking on Nasruddin Imavov. Imavov at 10-3. Shahbazyan at 11-2. Real quick, Trey. I just want to say something real quick. The Braves, the Atlanta Braves, I know we're in an MMA show. The Atlanta Braves are currently up 7-0.
So they're going to win the World Series.
They're going to win the World Series. I, like most kids, grew up watching the Atlanta Braves, right? Okay. And being a big David Justice, Greg Abbott, just Chipper Jones. When my parents split, my dad lived in Atlanta and my mom lived in Pittsburgh. So in the summers and the falls, you know, before school would start, I would go down and visit my dad in Atlanta, and we would go to Braves games. Mm-hmm. It's going to be, I don't give a hoot about baseball currently. Like, it's not something that I've cared about in a long time. But it's going to be cool to see the Braves win the World Series, because if I was ever going to align myself with a baseball team that I actually cared about, 9-year-old me is super pumped that they're getting ready to win.
Ah, see, that's cool, dude. There's a little human element to the Dave Lippin here. Yeah. He's almost called you Dave Lippin, dude. This seltzer I'm having that I switched after the shoe beer is very strong.
All right, Edmund Shabazian at 11-2, taking on Nasruddin Imavov at 10-3. Essentially going to be a pick for this one as well.
I'm so hyped for this.
Shouldn't be. I love Imavov here.
Yes.
Overrunner rounds at 2.5. I don't know if he necessarily gets done inside the distance, but this is a great spot for Imavov. I think a win here projects him forward the way he needs to be. I think he gets it done. I don't know how, but a more confident play despite pick of money for me on Saturday night is Nasruddin Imavov.
Yeah, dude. I've been on high on Imavov for a while. You guys all know that. This was a dude that came in. I knew he was going to murder Ian Heinisch, and he did. I didn't care about the wrestling. I was like, his striking's better. He's got good takedown defense. A guy whose grappling's A side just made him look like an absolute amateur. He looked great in the Phil Haas fight in the later rounds because he's got good cardio. Phil Haas, we're going to obviously talk about him, but he looked great. And if that was a 5-round fight, he was going to murder Phil Haas. Edmund Shabazian, the freaking wonder boy, the guy that UFC was going to make the next guy. He aligned himself with a piss poor camp, a piss poor coach. He's very one dimensional. He has no ground game whatsoever. If he does not get it done in the first round, Edmund Shabazian, he is done for. Imavov is durable and can get it done in the later rounds. Imavov.
All right, man. I like the conviction. I like the conviction you're hitting me with here.
Yeah.
Feeling strong about it?
Yeah. Strong. I freaking hate what's his name, dude? His name evades me because I don't even want to think about it. The coach, Ronda Rousey, I hate him. Dude.
Phil Haas at 11-2, taking on Chris Curtis, 26-8. Excuse me. Chris Curtis plus 255, Phil Haas minus 330. Another guy that you hate, Phil Haas. Chris Curtis plus 255. You said he's the second part of your parlay. You are on a Colby Covington, Chris Curtis. The four C's. Colby Covington, Chris Curtis.
It's a sign. It's a
sign, bro.
I needed the sign.
Bang it. I did not need the sign, though.
I knew from the beginning when I saw Chris Curtis fight, I was like, this guy's going to be, he's going to make an impact in this division. He's a PFL guy. He trains with Sean Strickland. He gets in freaking rounds. This is a guy that throws for the fences, is extremely durable. Dude, Phil Haas, yes, he's looked better since he moved to Sanford MMA. Better. He's still not, he's completely dismissing his wrestling background that he had. His hands are starting to evolve, but he still has no cardio tank. I think a guy that's going to press forward really doesn't have much to lose here. He's in a great spot to make an actual name, have someone on his resume. At plus 255, this is a dog that's going to fight for your money. I will surround myself with any fighters right now that are getting in rounds with Sean Strickland, and Sean Strickland's like saying, hey, dude, let's go throw. That, to me, pays dividends. I know the barometer. I know the ferocity. I freaking love Chris Curtis here. Two-leg parlay. Put it with Colby Covington. It's like a plus 1100 shit epic.
Yeah. I'm cool with it, man. I'm not sold on Phil Haas yet, just to be honest with you. I'll go with Chris Curtis. I will lean experience. Chris Curtis has fought in every promotion. I mean, really, the guy literally has fought for just about every promotion. I'll read some of these off to you. He does have a loss to Bilal Muhammad outside the UFC and HFC. But he's literally, listen. he is the guy that has been grinding in the shadows for years, accumulating a good record, and he just needs his opportunity, right?
Yeah.
Like, he just needs it. Okay.
Yeah.
So, like, fighting in promotions like Absolute Action and Turf Wars.
Sick, dude.
I know, right? Yeah, I know. And then he was a double champ, I believe. Was it in where was he a double champ? Was it CES or something like that? He was a double champ. Absolute Action. And then, dude, how's this for a win, right? Gets a win in the Premier MMA Championship 3. Do you know who he beat in Premier MMA Championship 3?
No.
Portland Pringle the Third.
Wow. Where is Portland nowadays?
You know what, man? The last time that I saw Portland Pringle the Third fight, dude, it was, I think he went over. Yeah. Portland Pringle the Third is a professional boxer now. That's what I thought. But Portland Pringle the Third was the fight that Daquan Townsend had before he got signed to the UFC. And Daquan Townsend is now out of the UFC, but that was the fight that brought Daquan Townsend in. Because Portland Pringle started out his career fantastic and then just took a nosedive, believe it or not. Believe it or not. Portland world has not been nice to Portland Pringle the Third.
I'm going to be honest. You sound like you're making that name up. There's no way there's a guy named Portland Pringle. It's like Chris Kringle. It's not happening.
No, it's Portland Pringle the Third. Not only is that a real name, but he has two people that came before him with that. That's a commitment. Family. There was a person named Portland Pringle, and they got a woman pregnant and convinced that woman to name that kid Portland Pringle. And then that guy grew up and got another woman pregnant and convinced that woman to name the child Portland Pringle.
Must be from some small town where they don't know real names.
Bro, that's some convincing right there. Anyway, yeah. Chris Curtis is going to win a fight.
There we go. Bang, bang.
Chris Curtis is going to win a fight on Saturday. Ally Quinta taking on Bobby Green. Ally Quinta at 14-6-1, taking on Bobby Green 27-12-1. I want to provide a big, deep analytical breakdown for this fight. Ally Quinta is a +150. Bobby Green's a -180. But I think it boils down to this: activity. Bobby Green has been more active. Ally Quinta has not. Ally Quinta's coming off a knee injury. Bobby Green is not. So Ally Quinta has been one foot in, one foot out, selling houses and dealing with knee injuries for the better part of 4 years now. And Bobby Green has been active, getting in work and rounds with the best of the best in the lightweight division. I'm on Bobby Green here, -180. I feel very confident in him at that spot. Minimal juice for how confident I feel in him.
I feel like the game has passed Ally Quinta by. I really do. I think that this is, I mean, I kind of talked about it a little bit earlier, but this is the whole Conor McGregor evolution thing, dude. I mean, literally, he's been selling real estate as his other people or friends within Sarah Longo have actually been seeing what relevant competition is. Unless he's getting the true like barometer that Marab's bringing into that gym or that Aljo's bringing into that gym, like he has no idea what's out there. Bobby Green, who has been active, who has great defense, who knows how to wear on you, can elongate, has momentum. Dude, this is a tough thing, especially for Ally Quinta, who as of his recent fights, you know, and you want to call him quote unquote recent, he has moved away from the wrestling style. He is only using his hands. Bobby Green's not going to really want to engage with the hands. He's going to do something that Ally Quinta has not been privy to for a very long time. Bobby Green's a solid play here. Don't play him inside the distance. Just play him outright over 2.5. I see Ally Quinta, while he has been away from the game, he is still a fairly durable dude. So this could go the distance.
The only thing that makes me nervous about betting Bobby Green is he always finds him on the weird. He always finds himself in a situation where it's going to be a split decision. Mm-hmm. I hate the fact that he never cleanly wins any fight. Like, I'm never waiting for the judges to read a scorecard and going, hell yeah, Bobby Green won this fight. I'm always like, something weird's about to happen.
Yeah.
That's the only thing. I need him to be able to clearly win a fight, clearly win a round. That's what makes me nervous about that guy. I freaking hate the fact that I can never just rest at the end of a fight going, yes, Bobby Green won this fight. I hate that. Right. He always leaves himself in position for interpretation. Just emphatically went around. Yep. Finish somebody.
Then he gives a fucking wacko speech.
Right. All right. Featured prelim, Andreas Michailidis taking on Alex Pereira. Pereira is at 3-1. Michailidis is at 13-4. If you're wondering why this is the featured prelim on a stacked card, I'll tell you why. Alex Pereira is the last guy to beat Izzy Adesanya in a kickboxing match. He knocked out Israel Adesanya. He's a -255 favorite here against Michailidis at a +200. Over on a round straight is at 1.5. 3-1 as a professional mixed martial artist. Do you think that Alex Pereira is going to live up to the hype, go in there and finish Andreas Michalidis, which he needs to do to maintain any momentum that the UFC is trying to put behind him?
I think it's an interesting matchup. One, yeah, because of the history that Alex Pereira has. But Michalidis, you know, this is a guy that's a bite down in your mouthpiece, die in your shield type fighter. So they're expecting fireworks with this fight. I think also when you look at Alex Pereira, not only is he the guy that knocked out Izzy Adesanya, but he also comes from Glover's camp. So he's riding the high of Glover Teixeira's camp, his ground game, his jiu-jitsu. That was always a big void for Alex Pereira. He had great kickboxing, but he didn't have the ground game. He trains under Glover. He's got a good team around him, so he's building that foundation. So I think that a more well-rounded Alex Pereira could actually be, you know, pretty significant. I don't think he's justified at a minus 255. I think, you know, you have a live dog in Michalidis here. He is very strong and can put you out. But I think as a well-rounded, you know, I don't know. I think Alex Pereira can get it done. I'm going to stay away probably, dude. I like over 1.5 though. I do like that.
Okay. Yeah. I think it's interesting. I think aggression level is what pays dividends here, right? Who's going to be the aggressor? Who's going to say this is my pace? If Michalidis comes out there and he tries to engage in a kickboxing match, clearly it's going to go one way and it's going to be the wrong way for him. But if he can go out there and make Pereira fight an MMA fight, he's an exponentially higher chance of winning the fight, which he needs to do. He cannot sit back and allow Pereira to dictate the pace. He's got to pressure him immediately and not give Pereira room to work. He cannot let this resemble anything remotely close to a striking battle, or it's not going to fare well at all. I understand that, you know, he goes by the Spartan and he wants to, you know, get in these dog fights. Save that for another day. Like your girl, Jessie Jess, who just got a win 2 weeks ago. Was it last week? 2 weeks ago, whenever she won. She went, trained with DC and some other guys, learned how to wrestle, and just went out there and wrestled the entire fight. And then said afterwards, that was always going to be my game plan. I wanted to see if I could win a fight that way. And she went out and she did it.
Right.
Michalidis needs to adopt a very similar approach here. Yes, knocking out Pereira would do a ton more for him career trajectory wise, but a win is a win. And at this point, you need it. So go out there, get the win. I know he's coming off a knockout over KB Buehler, but KB Buehler, we called that way back. Well, that's just that ain't it, man. Buehler's not that guy. So after losing to Modestus Bukauskas, who's no longer in the promotion, and then a win over KB Buehler, you need something here. Go out there, dominate Pereira, use wrestling, use a mixed martial arts style approach, win the fight. Don't go out there and try to kickbox with him because you're going to end up on his highlight reel.
Exactly.
If you're Pereira, you cannot get beat by this guy.
No.
You can't. If he goes out there and he gets beat by him, we're going to see Gokhan Saki 2.0. Who fights in the promotion and he's gone.
Yeah.
World champion level kickboxer comes in, mixed bag, 1-1, and you're out. They don't care. We brought you in to do something. You're not doing it. Dance for me, monkey. And if you don't dance, they're going to fire you.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
So, all right. Here we go. Money line. Win, lose. That's all I care about. Ready?
Let's do it.
Vergara, Osborne.
Osborne.
I'm on Osborne too. Souza, Bagdasarian.
Bagdasarian.
My mother as well. Jacoby Allen.
Jacoby.
I'm on Jacoby as well. Barnett, Vellante.
Vellante. I don't like it.
I'll go Vellante too for right now. All right. Williams, Gary.
Gary.
I'll go Gary. Shabazian, Imavov.
Imavov.
Imavov as well. Curtis and Hawes.
Curtis.
I'm on Curtis. Bobby Green, Ally Quinta.
Green.
I'm on Green as well. Alex Pereira, Andreas Michalidis.
I hate this one too. I'm going to go Pereira.
All right. I'm on him as well for right now. Vera, Edgar.
Edgar.
Edgar as well. Shane Burgos, Billy Q.
Burgos.
I'm on Burgos. Gaethje Chandler.
Gaethje.
I'm on Gaethje. Zhang Weili, Rose Namajunas.
Going Rose.
I'm on Weili. And then Colby Kamara.
Oh, the chaos will be brought at MSG.
I'm on Colby as well. All right, guys, if you don't already do so, please follow us everywhere at Punchlist MMA, Instagram, Twitter. You want to shoot us an email, if you can do that, chat at Punchlist MMA. Shout out to our show sponsors, Allegiance Clothing and Stay Classy Meats. Best way to support the show is by taking advantage of some of the deals that our show sponsors offer you. If you can't do that and you want a more fiscally responsible way to support the show, please consider leaving a review wherever you listen to us. And if you can't do that or you've already done that, please like, subscribe, share any of the YouTube comment or content that we create, or just simply share some of the social media content as well. Any little bit helps the algorithm and brings us out to more people if you want that kind of thing. If you don't, that's okay too. All right. You got anything else for the people, Trey?
Just the always bang, bang.
Be good to each other, guys.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing Board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.